everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 67 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Lima Grain Shakes Things Up, about my conversation with three Lima Grain Cereal Seeds executives and how the company's marketing campaign for its varieties is bringing the power of advertising to the otherwise staid seed business. For those who aren't farmers or involved in the seed business, a 20-second seed industry primer. Breeding wheat in the Pacific Northwest was largely a game played by public universities and the Agricultural Research Service of the USDA prior to the early 2000s. Since then, several private companies have gotten into the business. In the Pacific Northwest, the highest profile are Westbred Monsanto, Syngenta, and Lima Grain. In the parlance of the industry, the three companies are often referred to as privates. These privates started out with almost no market share. That's not the case anymore. In the soft white winter class, private varieties comprised 37% of the market in 2017, with much of the rest divided among Oregon State, the University of Idaho, and the Agricultural Research Service, and of course, Washington State University, which remains the big cougar on the block. Ironically, however, its share of the soft white winter market is also 37%. Other wheat classes vary dramatically in terms of which organization is in the driver's seat. Soft white spring and hard red spring varieties, for instance, are both largely in WSU's back pocket. But hard red winter wheat is a different story. There, private varieties total more than 98% of the planted acreage, with Lima Grain the dominant player. I think all of us involved in the wheat industry can agree that Lima Grain does not hide its light under a bushel. The company, which often advertises its varieties on the back page of various agricultural periodicals, including Wheat Life, has brought a certain pizzazz to the conservative seed business. Among other varieties, there's LCS Jet with the tagline, "Supersonic Yield Potential." UI Castle CL Plus with the tagline, "Defend Your Fields," and LCS Drive with the tagline, "Hit the Long Ball on Your Acreage." I personally like LCS Luna and its tagline, "Eclipse Your Former Yield Potential." Though the illustration of LCS Genie, a malting barley, is my favorite. Who wouldn't like an Aladdin-looking genie with a wheat straw sticking out of his mouth? After years of naming varieties after deceased scientists, relatives, or other important people in agriculture, Washington State University is getting into the game too, with its marketing company Washington Genetics, generically advertising its varieties as "bred to dominate the field," with a photo of a cougar appearing to stalk through a field of wheat, and variety names like Puma and Seahawk. In advertisements, Westbred Monsanto claims its varieties are "bred to win," showing two people walking through a uniform field of wheat with the numbered varieties it's promoting in one corner of the page. Syngenta advertises its AgriPro selections as "varieties that lead the industry and lead you to better yields." The best way to choose varieties, of course, is by studying the Washington State Crop Improvement Seed Buying Guide or going to the Variety Selection Tool on the WSU Small Grains website. Nevertheless, the new advertising paradigm is working, if Lima Grain's penetration in the market is any indication. Jim Peterson is Lima Grain's Vice President for Research in the United States. I've known Peterson for more than 20 years, but I knew his father, Clarence Pete Peterson, first. Pete Peterson was the wheat breeder at WSU, whose claim to fame is the long-lasting variety Eltan. Released in 1992, more than 17,000 acres of certified Eltan seed was planted in 2017, and that doesn't count saved seed. I got to know Jim, his son, when he was the wheat breeder at Oregon State University. About 8 years ago, the younger Peterson left OSU for Lima Grain Cereal Seeds in the U.S. I wondered at the time if he knew what he was doing, given that I'd never heard of Lima Grain, and a lot of us were in the same boat. A French cooperative and the largest seed company in Europe, Lima Grain Cereal Seeds, also known by its initials, LCS, saw the U.S. as a land of opportunity, and without any infrastructure, made the decision to launch a seed business here. As far as I'm concerned, Lima Grain couldn't have picked a better individual to lead their research effort, and Frank Curtis and Zach Gaines, who you'll hear from later, are no slouches either. But what I particularly like about all of them is that they don't interpret my tough questions as criticism, but rather as opportunities to be transparent and explain their motivations. Where other companies might have tried to obscure or explain away the low quality of their early releases, the executives acknowledged the fact and then explained how their early efforts were part of jump-starting the company in the market, assuring me their quality was going to improve. And it has. Speaking of jump-starting, one of the other innovative approaches that Lima Grain has taken is the degree to which they have engaged with university programs. Although WSU isn't one of their partners, Oregon State and the University of Idaho are, along with other institutions across the U.S. I touched base with Jim Peterson in June 2017 at the Reardon Field Day and then again in November at the Tri-State Grain Growers Convention. I asked him to explain Lima Grain's relationship with its university partners.
There's three different levels of collaboration really going on now. With Oregon State University, we did some initial collaborations around some certain crosses and double haploids and joint testing. Those are now mature and in the market with Norwest Duet, Norwest Tandem. The University of Idaho materials we're collaborating with is actually more integrated program. Where we're actually joint testing, joint breeding, joint selecting materials. Those started a couple years later than the Oregon State collaboration, and those will be hitting the market now in the next year or two. And then there are, of course, the true LCS Lima Grain materials ourselves that include European material out of our French and German programs, as well as collaborative developed materials that are really ours and brought in by public crosses into our material from the European material. So we're covering three different layers, really, of varieties coming out from the co-bred Oregon State, co-bred University of Idaho, and then true LCS developed materials.
Now, Lima Grain is across the United States. Do you have these other cooperative agreements with other universities?
We do. Actually, we have collaborations from coast to coast with major universities, from Virginia Tech to Oregon State, University of Idaho, with Kansas State, with Nebraska, a number of universities, and they're all very productive. They're all a little complicated, but it's exciting to be able to bring materials through the programs with better genetics, faster to the customer, and with better defined agronomics as well. So we've been working very hard on that, spending a lot of time on the collaborations, and the growers are going to benefit from that.
So there is something to be said for two heads are better than one?
Absolutely. We started LCS back in 2010 with that objective, and we're seeing that mature programs really come to fruition, and we're really excited about the material right now that we're bringing into market.
Now, universities, by and large, have been really picky about their quality. How is Lima Grain and the university partners you have navigating the quality issue?
Well, qualities are obviously very important for delivering our varieties into the industry. And as you look at an international company coming into the United States, one of the challenges is quality. We recognize that we're bringing different quality types into the U.S. market for agronomic purposes, for disease resistance purposes, and for just tremendous yield potential of some of the European material, for example. But having the partnerships on a local basis is really important, because then you can tap into the local quality base that fits the market classes for the United States. And so that was also part of the strategy for the university collaborations, was we needed local adaptation and we needed the best quality types from the programs to fit U.S. market class. And so that's been a big part of what we've done and why we've done it to bring it to market.
The Washington Grain Commission is holding universities and private companies' feet to the fire when it comes to releasing quality wheat varieties. Take a look at the 2018 Preferred Variety brochure on the WGC website. Go to the Farmers tab and click Publications. No company wants to release a least desirable quality wheat variety. Nevertheless, there are five of these least desirables under the soft white winter classification. None of them are from Lima Grain. See what I mean about the company improving its track record? Bear with me a moment while I explore some personal territory with you that has an application here. I'm a writer, a pretty good writer. I've even written a pretty good novel and a pretty good screenplay. I'm not, however, a pretty good marketer. I don't like to blow my own horn, and the idea of hustling editors for a book contract is against my nature. Let the work speak for itself, I say. That's not the way the world works. You can write, make, grow the best of anything, but if you don't show up to market it, well then, you're out of luck. Thankfully, Eastern Washington wheat farmers have the Washington Grain Commission to help them with their marketing. All of the seed companies doing business in the Northwest understand that marketing is important too. But Lima Grain's approach also makes it a little, entertaining. As a creative person myself, I enjoy the company's innovative take on one of the backwaters of American advertising. I spoke with Frank Curtis, the company's chief operating officer, and Zach Gaines, its technical and marketing manager, at the Washington State Crop Improvement Association annual meeting in the Tri-Cities in early November 2017. Curtis, a transplant from Britain, is the one with the English accent. I begin by asking whether the company's marketing strategy was something developed in-house or by an advertising agency.
Both, really. The ideas are ours, but we get a professional design agency to visualize them for us.
So when you come up with a name like Sonic, that's your name?
That's absolutely our name, yeah. Zach and I spend a lot of time, and the whiteboard in his office is full of potential names. And what we tend to do is throw maybe 20 or 30 names on the board. We get our associates, our colleagues into the room, and we thin them down a bit into a shortlist. And then we look at the shortlist to say, which of those names can actually give us the best marketing image, you know, a visual image, a theme line that's associated with the name, like, for example, LCS Shark, the great white yielder. I've got to admit we have a little bit of fun doing it, but the main point of that is that we want to create names and images that are instantly memorable, because half the battle in getting growers to order these varieties is the ones that they remember.
Did you ever think about just having numbered varieties?
We really never did. When we came out of the gates, we wanted to create, and it's kind of a brand recognition type of scenario where we wanted people to be familiar with LCS and with our company, but we wanted them to be familiar with the individual varieties as well. So if you think about a print publication, you reach a lot of folks in the PNW through print. We wanted them to look at the back cover of a magazine or look at the inside and see LCS Shark and see a picture and maybe, you know, create a memory and think, that was neat. Oh, that's the one where there was a shark in a wheat field. And at the same time, the LCS is still there. But we wanted the varieties to really be able to live on their own without the LCS brand necessarily or the LCS logo.
I'm curious, what are some of the rejects that you have had?
Boy, we've had a bunch of them. I tell you, any variety that we release, there's a gatekeeper at the USPVP office, and we run every variety by him. We've had so many incredible names that have come through, and then you send an email and you get it back. Well, that one's already been taken. So I don't know if there's any specific. We almost released one in Kansas called LCS Patriot, and we thought it was going to be incredible. And it turns out that there was a really small Canadian breeding program that in 1984 they used it. And we weren't able to, but really, there's been a lot. There's thousands of names that have already been used.
You called Sonic your first genuine dryland variety. You know, that bears the question, what were the previous varieties?
Our germplasm tends to do better in high rainfall situations and irrigated situations, and we have worked very hard to try and find something which really is well adapted to dry land and performs well in that environment. And so far, the closest we've come is probably Huffman, the UIWSU co-bred variety, but we're constantly looking for something which performs well on dry land, and this is the first time that we've actually found something from our own populations that is, and I use the word again, genuinely adapted to below 12-inch rainfall, and that's the variety Sonic. It's derived, one of the parents was Tubbs 06, and the other was a breeding line which was derived from a very old variety, which you may know, but I'd never heard of, but Hill 81 apparently was a very popular variety in the end of the 20th century. And through those two varieties, Hill 81, Tubbs 06, and a little bit of European germplasm, we've managed to put together a package that really does perform well in below 12-inch rainfall. So we're pleased that that's going to extend our footprint.
During your presentation here at the Washington State Crop Improvement Association annual meeting, you showed us several varieties that were being released that are stripe rust susceptible varieties. Given how cheap fungicides are now, is it your belief we don't have to pay as much attention to stripe rust?
No, absolutely not. And once again, it's a question of grower choice. We have got varieties in that product range there that are completely resistant to stripe rust. And we've got varieties, for example, LCS Fusion AX, the coaxium variety, which is quite susceptible and definitely will need fungicides. But as I say, it's grower choice. The effect of low grain prices is that some growers are going to spend as little as possible as they can on their crops, and they will seek out a resistant variety so they know they can save money on fungicides, and we aim to give them that opportunity. But there are also, in our product range, there are varieties which have got moderate resistance or moderate susceptibility to stripe rust, which, given a fungicide application, will out-yield the more resistant varieties. So we like to give the growers the option to choose.
What's your irrigated penetration? And the reason I ask this question is because it seems like you have a lot of irrigated varieties.
I would say in terms of our irrigated varieties, you got to remember that our program is only 7 years old at this point. And Frank made mention of this a little earlier, but the initial germplasm that we started the program with was a lot stronger on irrigated ground than it was in dry land. And we've been making some strides in terms of filling that dry land gap. But for us, we're always going to have varieties that are exceptional under irrigated scenarios or high rainfall scenarios. I think that what you'll notice is that our entire portfolio has evolved to the point to where our dry land varieties are just about as good and competitive as the irrigated ones were. But right out of the gates, that was the best germplasm we had, or at least the initial adaptation.
There's another aspect to that, Scott, and that is that in 40-plus states, it's probably a good idea for a farmer with plenty of water to grow an alternative crop, such as soybeans or corn. But when you look at the infrastructure of the market in the Pacific Northwest, it's really not geared to the corn and beans markets. And if you add on to that, the proximity to the Portland export terminal actually makes cash prices for wheat more attractive than they are in the Great Plains, where we've heard about farmers getting something like $3.70 a bushel this year. You're closer to $5 in this area, so it's still worthwhile pushing wheat for yield in irrigated conditions compared with the alternatives such as corn production. And that's one of the reasons why we keep a reasonable number of irrigated varieties in our range.
Now, tell me about the coaxium wheat production system. What is it? Where did it originate, and how is Lima Grain involved?
So we're involved with coaxium in a few different ways. We are going to be one of the companies releasing one of the first varieties. CWRF and LCS will each have one of the first two varieties that will be available. Really, our role is kind of the commercial arm It's a collaborative effort between Colorado Wheat Research Foundation, Albaugh Chemicals, and Lima Grain. And as the commercial arm, we're going to be responsible not only for bringing the first variety to market, but also managing a lot of the integration agreements with partners who are going to be licensing the technology. So we are really kind of the commercial piece, managing some of the marketing efforts, and kind of playing or being involved with the other two companies, just in bringing it to market.
This is a herbicide-resistant wheat. Isn't this just another Clearfield system?
It's similar in concept to the Clearfield system, but then you could also compare it with GMO systems in other crops, such as Roundup Ready or Liberty Link. They're all basically herbicide-resistant systems that give the grower the option to have a different approach to weed control. The Coaxium system is actually built on four main pillars, and the pillars are, firstly, a patented proprietary herbicide resistance trait. The second is elite genetics as the background to deliver the trait to the grower. The third is the highly effective herbicide, which isn't yet registered but will be available next year. And the fourth is a stewardship program, which is designed to preserve the herbicide resistance for as long as possible in the wheat without transferring the resistance to grass weed species. So we're working very closely with CWRF and CSU and Albaugh to put together stewardship guidelines that make this this trait technology valuable to the grower for at least 10 and hopefully for 20 years.
I ran into Jim Peterson again after I had interviewed Curtis and Gaines about the company's marketing prowess. It was November 9th at the Tri-State Grain Growers Convention. I asked him, as a scientist, what he made of his colleagues' marketing campaign.
First of all, I've learned a lot from these guys about marketing since I joined Lima Grain in 2010. You still have to have a solid package of genetics. You still have to have a solid package of disease resistances. But it's really clear you also have to have a message. You have to have a catchy name. You have to have the visuals. You have to have, you can't overcomplicate it. And I find a lot of my colleagues will do just that. They'll run down a list of traits and a list of disease resistances and susceptibilities, and the grower's eyes glazes over because it's too much. He doesn't understand what is it going to replace, what is he going to remember, what are the two or three key messages that are going to lead him to that variety. So you still have to have a solid product or you're going to lose it in the marketplace very quickly. But you can increase the penetration, the adoption of a variety very quickly with the right message, with the right background. And again, that marketing information is really critical to us. It's been super.
Curtis is retiring soon, and he's been a major force behind Lima Grain's marketing campaign. I'll be watching with interest to see whether the company continues its whimsical wheat-selling ways or adopts a more traditional marketing focus. Speaking of marketing, you folks hearing my voice now are not just my listeners, you are my marketers too. Miraculously, you have found this podcast, but there are five times your number who have never heard of it. If you like what you hear and would like it to continue, the best way to ensure that is through a growing audience. Don't just tell your family, friends, neighbors, and business associates about this podcast. Show them how easy it is to download to their smartphones and listen to later. That's all the time we have. Thanks for listening to episode 67, or what I've entitled, Lima Grain Shakes Things Up. About Lima Grain Cereal Seeds, a French-owned wheat seed company with a sense of humor. Please join me again next time for another episode of Wheat All About It.
You think we're simple, you think we're not bright. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.